So this is our biblical soul care class we've been going through the last several weeks, fearing people and fearing man or fearing God. And last week we just started on the last part three of our series. We're getting to the end of it, but invalidating the fear of man, solving the problem, and what I'm doing, in full disclosure, is chapter 6 and 7 of this book, if you want to pick it up and read it. When People Are Big and God Is Small by Ed Welch is probably the best book on this topic. But we're just going through those two chapters, and he's dealing with how do we grow in our fear of the Lord, how do we know, or how do we learn to fear the Lord. And just using that because it's a really good resource, and I think he does a really good job of explaining that. So last week we just looked at the world solution to the fear of man and how it doesn't offer us any good solutions. The best offer it has is really to build our own self-esteem, and it just feeds the problem of our pride and our selfishness when we do that, to think more highly of ourselves than we ought, and to really to put others down as we do that, to make that imbalance even more. And that's just the world's answer to it, and it's not a biblical answer. The answer that the Bible gives us, obviously, is to fear God. Because as Ed Welch says, the man who fears God fears nothing else. And that's where we want to get to. And so we tried to define last week, what does it mean to fear the Lord? And I'm just going to put this chart back up here. There's a wide range of what it means to fear the Lord, ranging from dread, terror, all the way to trust and worship on the other end. And just a few observations and try to clear up some misunderstanding maybe. All of these definitions, all of these words are a correct way to view what it means to fear God. Okay, they're all good answers to the question, what does it mean to fear God? Okay, and I don't think I made the comment, and it might have been confusing, but I don't think that we people that live on this side of the chart are more mature than over here, right? We need to view it all as fearing God. But then the question arises, why is there an arrow there then? Because it looks like that's the direction we need to move. And I think the idea that Ed Welch has, is that, and this was brought up last week too, but we can't have a worshipful fear of God without having this terror and dread and trembling, right? The worship fear is built on the terror and dread and trembling, right? Knowing that God is holy and we are not, he's just, we deserve his wrath. All of this really informs our worship. And without this, we can't have a real worship of God, a worshipful fear. And without knowing God's love, right, for us, and the sacrifice that Jesus made on the cross on our behalf, we won't ever move past our terror and dread and trembling of God. So, I don't know. I hope that helps. If there's any other thoughts or questions or comments, the chart, or if it's helpful or not, let me know. But that's our definition, kind of, of what it means to fear God. And then Ed Welch has a kind of more synthesized definition, maybe. He says, the fear of the Lord is reverent submission that leads to obedience. And it's interchangeable with worship, rely on, trust, and hope in. Like terror, it includes a knowledge of our sinfulness and God's moral purity. It includes a clear-eyed knowledge of God's justice and his anger towards sin. But this worship fear also knows God's greatness and his forgiveness, mercy, and love. So you see that spectrum of all these things that we need to keep in mind when we are trying to define what it means to fear God. So we talked about then we need to learn to fear God. We're not just born with it. When we're not born again, we don't automatically know what does it mean to fear God. And we looked at examples of how God taught the children of Israel to fear him when they came out of slavery in Egypt. They didn't know God. They didn't have the scriptures. God brought them to Mount Sinai and he said, gather the people. He told Moses, gather the people and I'm going to teach them to fear the Lord. I'm going to teach them to fear me. And we see also examples of in Deuteronomy when Moses was reviewing the law to the people. He said, one day you're going to want a king. And this is how the king should learn to fear me. He needs to write down the entire law, first five books of the Bible. And he needs to read it daily. And it needs to be with him. So the implication is that the kings would learn to fear God by reading his word over and over again. They had to meditate on it because they wrote it all out by hand. They were intimately aware of what God's law said. And then that's the implication for us too. The way we learn to fear the Lord is obviously we have to get to know who God is. And we can only get to know who God is through his word. And so that leaves us then to some other ways we can grow in our fear of the Lord, or not grow, but learn to fear the Lord. And I think God gives us examples from his creation that help us to learn to fear him. And so that's what we're going to look at right now. How does creation teach us to fear the Lord? This is question number 17 in your handout, if you have got one. And by the way, I think we're going to be done with the one we were talking about last week, that we had last week, and we'll be moving on to a new one, and I have that in the back, so if you didn't pick one up, you can we can take a break here in a minute and go get it. But how does creation teach us to fear the Lord? Now, I've got some verses here from the Psalms. Would somebody read Psalm 33, 8 through 9? Psalm 33, 8 through 9. It's there on your handout. You can also look it up in your Bible if you have a version you'd rather read.
Let all the earth fear the Lord. Let all the inhabitants of the world stand in awe of him. For he spoke, and it came to be. He commanded, and it stood firm.
Psalm 95, 4 through 5. Somebody could read that.
Pity's hands are the depths of the earth. The heights of the mountains are his also. The sea is his, for he made it, and his hands formed the dry land.
Good, thank you. And then lastly, Psalm 8, 3 through 4.
When I look at your heavens, the work of your fingers, the moon and the stars which you have set in place, what is man that you are mindful of him, and the son of man that you care for him?
So I just want us to think about these. There's more examples in the Psalms or the rest of Scripture, but just from these verses, from these examples, how does creation teach us to fear the Lord? What do you see there in these couple of verses? Let's just chew on that for a little bit.
Why science continues to see things greatly beyond our even imagination. It just blows you in awe what he makes and sets in place, like the stars and the moon.
Yeah.
The last verse. The moon and the stars. How do you do that without having an awesome ability which caused you to just in awe?
Yeah.
I just think of this, you know, out of space to space and the stars, the magnitude of our galaxies, just he controls everything just perfectly.
Yeah.
I mean, that's throws you off.
It's fun to talk or to hear people talk, like Jason Lyle that came to our church, I don't know, it's been several years ago, but he understands
just the bigness of space and all that. And when you hear people who study it and explain it, you feel so much more small, and you understand God in a way you didn't understand before, right? So yeah, the heavens declare the glory of God. An amazing thing to think about.
So I had a conversation with someone on this week, and she was asking me why we get to, she's saying, so since I'm not a believer, like, why do I get these, like, warm, wonderful, like, mountaintop experiences when I see beautiful sunsets, or when I see, like, twinkling lights, or, and so just having that conversation with her and talking about common grace, like, God gave that sunset, but also knowing for us, we get to see those beautiful sunsets, the beautiful creation, and then we get to have awe of God, which is not just a mountaintop thing. It doesn't just, we look at it, and then we get to have this ongoing, like, love of God.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What else in these verses? So yeah, we see all of the stars, we see the heavens, and we're in awe of that. What else?
I think the complexity of his creation is just, you know, there are so many things we still don't understand. And the eye is such a complex organ. And then I used to, we had Muscovy and Mallard ducks, and just to watch the different characteristics of those two ducks,
mm-hmm.
you know, just it's just amazing the variation that we are blessed with around us, that only God could create that.
Yeah.
I think part of it is he cares for us, so he makes all these big, magnificent things, and mm-hmm. it's easy for him. He does it with his hands, and all of the vastness of space he holds in his hands, but and yet he cares for us. And so there's a, when you think about that, he is evaluating, and he sees, and he knows all that I do and all that I think. And there's a certain kind of a fear of the Lord, a reverence and an awe, and sometimes a terror and dread of he's seen all that I've done, this great, magnificent God, and he knows me and knows all about me.
Yeah. And think of that, like you said, I mean, the Grand Canyon fits in his hand, right? I've never been to the Grand Canyon. I really want to go, because I've heard that when you walk up to it, you're just struck by, whoa, you know, like there's a heaviness of it, like, wow. But that fits in God's hand. I think there's another verse that talks about just that the ocean is in the palm of God's hand in Isaiah 40. So just think about that, right? How big is our God? Everything we've been talking about, he just spoke it and it happened. Like, it came to be. How amazing is that? He didn't spend years and years and years working on something. He just said it, and it's there. And we're still trying to figure out and be able to mine the depths of everything he's created. And he created it with a word. Isn't that amazing? Right? We've spent, 8,000 years-ish being alive on earth, men have, and we still don't know everything that God's created with a word. So, amazing to think about. That God did all that. And he can hold the oceans and the Grand Canyon in his hand, and then, as Brock said, that God even knows you, right? He created you for a purpose. He knows you intimately. He's not so big that he's just above everything and forgets the little details, right? So, any other thoughts on how creation?
I always think about how everything works together. And I'm like, oh, well, yeah, obviously it does, because that's how God created it to be. Like, I don't think about it.
Mm-hmm.
But yet to actually sit and think about, like, gravity and the moon and how it controls the ocean and, like, cycle of water. Like, all of these things that he created, these systems that he put into place. Like, all to support mankind, mm-hmm. and how much he cares for us, and that he's established all of these things, but yet if we were to sit and study them and to see all the processes that it takes, all the little steps that it takes for everything to work together perfectly in exactly the way that he designed, I don't spend enough time like actually sitting down and thinking about that, because I'm just like, well, yeah, obviously, like, that's how he made it to be, so that's how it works. But yet the steps that it takes for all those things to happen, it's just, it's mind-blowing.
Yeah. And I don't know, I've been thinking about this too. I don't know if you've heard just things that are going on right now with AI, with pairing that maybe with quantum computing, which I don't understand, but apparently quantum computing is nothing compared to the computers that we have right now. And if you compare the two, the learning ability that AI will have with a quantum computer is just astounding. So they think that within, I don't know, you hear different stories, but within a couple years, people are going to be able to ask computers things that we can't solve, and it will just spit out an answer. It's almost godlike. It scares some people because it feels like humans are getting to that point where they can create their own world. Right? Ask the computer what to do, and it will make it. Or it'll teach you how to make it. Right?
It's kind of interesting because there's a guy named Yuval Harari that is trying to tell people that they can live forever by turning their mind over to the computer, and you know, that's an eternity that in a web where you get to choose whatever environment you want to be in. It's just, it's unbelievable that people would be vulnerable to that.
I think and the irony of that though is it took a man to create that, and they want to say that all of this that is much more complex than that and happened in an instant happened by chance.
Right, happened
and
by
so,
chance.
And so like even what they're trying to create, that's this like big thing, they would never say that that could have created itself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But even as amazing as that would be, if all those things are true, that just pales in comparison to God. And I don't know that God will let it get that far. I don't know. It feels like a Tower of Babel moment where God's going to say, okay.
There's an error message.
Yeah. We're done with that. So, yeah. So, how have you experienced, we've had some people share about sunsets and stuff like that, but how have you experienced God's creation that left you in awe of your Creator? And just to kind of encourage the rest of us, places you've been, experiences you've had with seeing what God has made, I don't know, that you have had this fear of the Lord renewed in your heart because of what you've seen Him create.
Seeing babies born,
yeah.
It's right in the middle there.
Yeah.
Well, I think the DNA, you know, what there's little, I mean, what gets clear down, and you're like, really? Everybody's got their own? All the people of the world forever have all been individual? It's nuts. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying?
I think just watching a storm come in, you know, a thunderstorm, it's got the lightning flashing and the big cumulus clouds, and seeing the awesome power in that storm and the unpredictability of it.
Yeah.
You know, the rain, maybe winds, maybe a tornado, and yet we have no control over it, but we know that God is in control of everything. And so it does create, you know, kind of a fear in a way.
Mm-hmm.
Because we know that He's in charge. And
yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's amazing to see. I think we live in an area that we have a unique way to view storms because there's not much in there to obstruct the view. You can see it coming for a while, and it's just an amazing, awesome black cloud with lightning and thunder, and it hits, you know, all of a sudden. So, yeah.
Yep. I think just seeing the layers of, like, you can see the sun cascading off the top of like an anvil head, and then you can see the curves and the nooks and the crannies of all the clouds, and then as it just gets deeper and darker, and then you just see like the pitch blackness right where over that cloud is. I see a lot of storms because I do a lot of driving,
mm-hmm.
and there's just, I mean, every, to think that every single one is like, there's not going to be another cloud that is that precise shape or form in that precise way or manner again, like these are unique, one time. You get to see, you get to glimpse this, create this, this thing that God has made. That's just part of his, part of the way the world works.
Yeah.
And just to think that that's, you know, unless you take a picture, that's the last time anyone's going to see that.
And pictures don't work, yeah. Right? I've tried taking pictures of something, and it's like, oh, that wasn't anything like what I remember it being. So, I mean, we're landlocked, but every time I've been to the ocean, it just blows me away. It's just huge, you know, mm-hmm. just vast. And I've never been out on a, in the middle of the ocean, I'm afraid to. It's like, I don't want to go there, right? I want, that seems, it's like a bad idea. Stay here on earth, or on land, right? So, my dad grew up near Niagara Falls. Every time, and we'd go back and visit grandparents there. Every time we went to the falls, it was just, whew, you know, you stand right, you can stand really close to where it falls over on the Canadian side. And you just think of that, all that water running over, the power of that, and you're standing right there to witness it. So, yeah, those type of things, I think, can teach us to, we can learn the fear of the Lord because of what he's created. And when we see that, we need to give him glory, right? That should be our response. Wow, we have a big God. Not, wow, we've evolved from nothing, right? So, so that's how creation, I think we can learn from creation. We can also learn from other people. And there's a lot of examples, I think, in the Bible that we can, of other people that can teach us to fear the Lord. I've just picked out a couple. Jacob is one, I think, that we can learn from. So I want to read a couple. I don't have them printed in here, but if you would take your Bibles and open up to Genesis 28. And if somebody would read Genesis 28, 10 through 17. Jacob is running from his brother Esau, and he's fleeing because Esau wants to kill him because he just stole his birthright. And he has a vision, a dream, and that's what we're going to read about. So Genesis 28, 10 through 17.
Jacob left Beersheba and went toward Haran, and he came to a certain place and stayed there that night because the sun had set. Taking one of the stones of the place, he put it under his head and lay down in that place. And he dreamed, and behold, there was a ladder set up on the earth, and the top of it reached to heaven. And behold, the angels of God were ascending and descending on it. And behold, the Lord stood above it and said, I am the Lord, the God of Abraham, your father, and the God of Isaac. The land on which you lie, I will give to you and to your offspring. Your offspring shall be like the dust of the earth, and you shall spread abroad to the west and to the east and to the north and to the south, and in you and your offspring shall all the families of the earth be blessed. Behold, I am with you, and will keep you wherever you go, and will bring you back to this land, for I will not leave you until I have done what I have promised you. Then Jacob awoke from his sleep and said, surely the Lord is in this place, and I didn't know it. And he was afraid and said, how awesome is this place? This is none other than the house of God, and this is the gate of heaven.
Thank you. So, what was Jacob's response then to his dream? He had a couple of responses. What were some of them? Yeah, he was in awe. I think we would be too, right? He was stunned. What else?
Seems like he had a mixture of fear and awe.
Mm-hmm.
And he was afraid and said, how awesome is this place? That's a weird mixture.
Mm-hmm.
It's a right mixture.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that fear informed his awe, right? And he was in awe of God. He said, God's here and I didn't know it. I see God in a different way. I'm sure he was taught about God by his father, that he experienced God in a new way that left him in fear and in awe of who he was. Okay? And then we have Jacob goes to Laban, gets married twice, has lots of kids, and then he needs to, he's gonna go back to back to where he was from, and he was gonna run into Esau again. But as he flees from Laban, Laban catches up to him finally at one point, and Jacob says something interesting in chapter 31. Somebody could read chapter 31, 51 through 54.
And Laban said to Jacob, "See this heap and the pillar which I have set between you and me. This heap is a witness, and the pillar is a witness. And I will not pass over the heap to you, and you will not pass over the heap and this pillar to me to do harm. The God of Abraham and the God of Nahor and the God of their father judge between us." So Jacob swore by the fear of his father Isaac. And Jacob offered a sacrifice in the hill country and called his kinsmen to eat bread. And they ate bread and spent the night in the hill country.
So just something interesting about this. What name did Jacob swear an oath to Laban? What did he say? I've never noticed this before. I don't know that I have. What name did he give to God?
Fear of his father Isaac.
Yeah. So he didn't say the God of his father Isaac, right? He said the fear of his father Isaac. And it's in the ESV, it's capitalized, saying that's a name of God that he chose, by the fear of his father Isaac. So I think he remembered his dream. He remembered the fear of the Lord, the awe of the Lord, and that was in his mind. Is I'm making an oath, and I'm going to swear it by the God who I fear. I just thought that was interesting. And then, obviously, in chapter 32, Jacob's about to meet Esau. So if you're looking there, who was Jacob fearing in chapter 32? What was he afraid of? What was going to happen? He had to go meet Esau face to face. He hadn't seen him since he fled from him, right? He's coming back. He doesn't know what's going to happen. He's afraid Esau's still mad at him. And then it sets up verses 24 through 30. Somebody would read that. And then we can think about this. Why did God reveal himself to Jacob and wrestle with him? And then we're going to read about that experience that Jacob had. Chapter 32, 24 through 30. If somebody would read that, that'd be great.
And Jacob was left alone, and a man wrestled with him until the breaking of the day. When the man saw that he did not prevail against Jacob, he touched his hip socket, and Jacob's hip was put out of joint as he wrestled with him. Then he said, "Let me go, for the day is broken." But Jacob said, "I will not let you go unless you bless me." And he said to him, "What is your name?" And he said, "Jacob." Then he said, "Your name shall no longer be called Jacob, but Israel. For you have striven with God and with men and have prevailed." Then Jacob asked him, "Please tell me your name." But he said, "Why is it that you ask my name?" And there he blessed him. So Jacob called the name of the place Peniel, saying, "For I have seen God face to face, and yet my life has been delivered."
So remember, Jacob was fearing Esau? In that context, then, why do you think God revealed himself to Jacob and wrestled with him? What lesson maybe was God trying to teach Jacob here?
Don't fear man, fear me.
Yeah, I think that's the basic lesson, right? God shows up and wrestles with him. And Who should you fear? Remember the vision? Remember, I am the God of fear. Don't fear your brother. Fear me. Remember who I am. And there's more lessons in there than that, but I think that's one that we can see, how God was leading Jacob and giving him glimpses of himself to prepare him for confrontation he had to have in the future, for the meeting that he was going to have. Now, obviously, Jacob still seems to fear his brother there, right? But it had to have some impact on him, right? Seeing the Lord face to face, wrestling with him like that. So we have that example of Jacob, how he grew in that. He learned, well, he didn't grow, he learned to fear the Lord. God gave him these circumstances to help him learn that. And then we have Moses. Moses is another interesting character. I think we can learn some things from him. Exodus chapter 3. You want to turn there? Verses 1 through 6 says, "Now Moses was keeping the flock of his father-in-law Jethro, the priest of Midian, and he led his flock to the west side of the wilderness and came to Horeb, the mountain of God. The angel of the Lord appeared to him in a flame of fire out of the midst of a bush. He looked, and behold, the bush was burning, yet it was not consumed. And Moses said, 'I will turn aside and see this great sight. Why should this bush not be burned?' When the Lord saw that he had turned aside to see, God called to him out of the bush, 'Moses, Moses.' And he said, 'Here I am.' Then he said, 'Do not come near. Take off your sandals, for the place that you are standing is holy ground.' And he said, 'I am sure I am the God of your father, the God of your father Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob.' And Moses hid his face, and he was afraid to look at God." So how did Moses react then to God revealing himself in this burning bush?
He was afraid.
He was afraid. And not only that, what else did he do?
He hid.
Yeah, he didn't want to look at it. That's a natural reaction, I think, to seeing God. We're afraid, we want to hide, right?
That was the same thing as Adam and Eve. When they eat the tree of good and evil, when God appealed to them, they was afraid.
And they were afraid because they knew God in a different way. God was holy and they were not. Right? There's that imbalance. The more we see that imbalance, the more we stand in fear of God, because he's just, right? He deserves to punish us for that sin. So Moses hid his face. But then I think Moses' fear of the Lord grew. All right, he learned to fear the Lord in a different way. And just notice in, go on to Exodus chapter 33, this description of what Moses was doing. He leads the Israelites out of Egypt, and almost every verse in Exodus and Leviticus is God spoke to Moses and said. God spoke to Moses and said. So chapter 33 verse 11 says, "Thus the Lord used to speak to Moses face to face, as a man speaks to a friend. When Moses turned again to the camp, his assistant Joshua, the son of Nun, a young man, would not depart from the tent." So God spoke later. Moses didn't seem to be afraid. He didn't hide his face. God spoke to him face to face. And I don't think Moses was, thought God was his buddy in any way. I think he still had this reverent dread and fear of God, but he didn't have this fear of God's punishment, right? He learned to fear the Lord in a way that he could speak to God face to face. And in fact, the next couple verses, Moses even says, I want to see you. I don't want to speak to you face to face, but I want to see your glory. And he had that desire. And so I think the more that we draw near to God and we understand that worshipful fear, the more we want to see him, the more we want to be close to him. And yeah, God said, well, you can't see my face, but I'll show you my back. And so we see that experience there in the last part of chapter 33. So Moses grew. He learned to fear the Lord. The last one here is just an example of the Hebrew midwives. It's interesting. In the first part of Exodus, Pharaoh had given a command that all the firstborn, or all the males that were born in Egypt to the Hebrews, they needed to be killed. So Exodus chapter 1, 15 through 21 says, then the king of Egypt said to the Hebrew midwives, one of whom was named Sapphira and the other Pua, when you serve as a midwife to the Hebrew women, see them on the birth stool. If it is a son, you shall kill him. But if a daughter, she shall live. But the midwives feared God and did not do as the king of Egypt commanded, but let the male children live. So the king of Egypt called the midwives and said to them, why have you done this and let the male children live? And the midwife said to Pharaoh, because the Hebrew women are not like the Egyptian women, for they are vigorous and give birth before the midwife comes. So God dealt well with the midwives, and the people of Israel multiplied and grew very strong. Because the midwives feared God, he gave them families. So I think it's an interesting situation there, right? They were left with a decision. Pharaoh said, I want you to kill all the baby boys that are born when you're there, right? What knowledge then did these midwives have of God? How did they know to fear God? That led them to disobey Pharaoh. We can combine both of these questions, but Scripture doesn't tell us, but maybe we can theorize. I think one, go ahead.
Their actions show that they trusted God more than they trusted Pharaoh in one way. I mean, these are two women being spoken to by the king of Egypt, which is kind of a big deal. But they deliberately disobey the king's order in order to show that they revere God and they revere the life that God brings in, and that they honor God by not killing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think they knew enough about God to know that killing somebody that God's created is wrong. that's a life that God made, and it would be wrong for me to take that. And it is quite remarkable somehow that these women were taught, they didn't have the Bible to read, not yet, because Moses wrote it all down, and you know, Moses hadn't got to that point yet. So how did they know about God? Had to be from their family, telling them the stories of creation and what God did. And so they knew enough about God to say, oh, that is wrong. And I need to obey, even the little that I know about God, I'm going to obey that rather than obey this king. That would be a big deal, right? Can you imagine getting called before the king? Here's what I want you to do. So just some insight there on that situation, that story, how the midwives feared God and God blessed them for it. Somehow he spared their lives. The king didn't didn't kill them. In fact, God blessed their families because of that too. So, any other thoughts on a couple of these situations? How do we learn to fear the Lord from the example of other people?
Well, I think in that story too, it's a good reminder that you don't have to know all the answers or have all the information or even know the big picture of what's going on. You have the one responsibility to fear the Lord. So it's just a good reminder that they didn't know how God was working in that situation. They just knew what they had to do.
They were obedient. I think that's another theme that comes up over and over again.
I think one thing I really admire about the people of Israel and the Jewish people is they are told repeatedly from the time they're young children over and over again what God has done for their people. It's repeated so much they have the identity of being God's chosen people. I think that we would do well if we reminded our children what God has done for our country. Mm-hmm. You know, the heritage that we've been given would be so important for them to identify that God has given us so much greatness.
Yeah, we live in a blessed time, and God's been good to us. And it's we owe God our obedience because of what He's done, right? So that's learning to fear the Lord, how God taught people to fear the Lord in the Old Testament, some of the lessons we can draw from that. And now I want to move to just the last couple minutes here. The next handout, if you've got it, it's, we've learned it, we can learn it, right? We can know it, but then how are we going to grow in it? How do we put that knowledge into practice? How does that knowledge work itself out in the actions that we take? So growing in the fear of the Lord is important. Ed Welch says this in his book. He said, "The problem is clear. People are too big in our lives and God is too small. The answer is straightforward. We must learn to know that our God is more loving and more powerful than we ever imagined. Yet this task is not easy. Even if we worked at the most spectacular of national parks, or the bush in our backyard started burning without being consumed, or Jesus appeared and wrestled a few rounds with us, we would not be guaranteed a persistent reverence of God. Too often our mountaintop experiences are quickly overtaken by the clamor of the world, and God once again is diminished in our minds. The goal is to establish a daily tradition of growing in the knowledge of God." So I think often we think, well, I'd fear God too if I saw him in a burning bush, right? If I had the experience Moses had, yeah, I'd fear him. That wouldn't be a problem. But we all grow complacent, and there are times in our lives that we maybe have this figured out, and then we grow complacent and we forget. We all forget. And we have something that none of those people had. I think that's why God appeared to them in so many different ways, in a burning bush at Mount Sinai. They didn't have the written word. They couldn't read about God. God had to reveal himself in certain ways. We have the Bible, and we have the amazing ability to sit down and read it every day, right? And do we take advantage of that? And I think the thing to remember in growing in the fear of the Lord is that it's not a one-time thing. We want it to be so badly, right? I want to learn this, get it down, and I want to move to something else. But it is a daily, almost renewing of your mind through reading God's word that allows us to continue to grow. The learning never stops, right? So, I mean, this is an issue that fearing man and fearing God is something that we're going to deal with the rest of our life. But I think we grow in our ability to do that. The more we are sanctified, the longer we're walking with the Lord, the easier it gets maybe, but it's never finished. I think that's the lesson that kind of stood out to me the most about thinking about this is that I am never going to get to the point where I fear the Lord always and fear man never, right? The learning has to continue. There has to be a daily growing in the knowledge of God. And that daily growing in the knowledge of God, what I put into my mind every day attributes to that. I can be lazy, and the work that I work, I don't have to think about what I'm doing. So I often listen to things on my phone all day, and I can listen to whatever I want. I like to listen to politics, so podcasts that deal with that. And if that's the only thing I put in my mind, I realize that my mind is wandering to unsanctified things. If I only listen to music that doesn't glorify and honor God, then your mind is going to start thinking about those things, right? So it's a daily walk. It's a daily perseverance in what are you listening to? What are you reading? It's hard. Just think about how exercise is. It can be easy to exercise maybe for 2 or 3 days in a row, but getting to the point where it's just consistent and you're doing it every day and it's a daily discipline is a hard thing to do. So think about that. Growing in the fear of the Lord, it's a daily walking with Him. That's kind of the bottom line. So then how do you do that? And that's what we're going to try to flesh out the rest of this handout. But Ed Welch says the fear of the Lord, to fear the Lord, you need to recognize that it's attractive, that it's something that you should do. I think just like recognizing that exercise is good for you even though you don't want to do it, there's things about exercise that are attractive. Once you learn to bear the load of exercise, your body does feel better. There's benefits to it. And to push through the pain of it, you need to recognize the benefits and how it's good for you. And so I think that's the point here, is recognizing, knowing the knowledge of the Holy God, we must find such knowledge beautiful and attractive. Beautiful and attractive. So Proverbs does a really good job of laying this out. How does the fear of God, the beauty of that, motivate me to fear the Lord, to grow in that? So consider these verses from Proverbs and what benefits are there to fearing the Lord. So we'll read through these and try to answer this question, and we'll probably end here. But listen to these Proverbs. Proverbs 9:10. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, and the knowledge of the Holy One is insight. Proverbs 19:23. The fear of the Lord leads to life, and whoever has it rests satisfied and will not be visited by harm. 10:27, the fear of the Lord prolongs life, but the years of the wicked will be cut short. 14:26, the fear of the Lord, in the fear of the Lord, one has a strong confidence, and his children will have a refuge. Proverbs 15:16, better is a little with the fear of the Lord than great treasure and trouble without it. Proverbs 22:4, the reward for humility and fear of the Lord is riches and honor and life. Proverbs 31:30, charm is deceitful, beauty is vain, but a woman who fears the Lord is to be praised. So it's just a snapshot of the different ways Proverbs talks about and tries to pique our interest in growing in the fear of the Lord. So from those verses, just brainstorm a little bit. What are some of the benefits that we see then of fearing the Lord? Some of the benefits there. You can put in your own words. Sometimes it's authority. What's that?
God loves us and living under his authority protects us.
Yeah, it's a protection.
Wisdom.
Brings wisdom. Yeah.
If we fear the Lord, we're probably not afraid of man.
Yeah.
Or flesh.
Yeah.
confidence in fearing the Lord.
Isn't that nice? Sometimes we wonder if we're doing the right thing. We second guess our decisions. Have I made the right choice to do whatever? And then if you're truly fearing the Lord, have I made that choice based on a right fear of God? I can have confidence that I've made the right choice, I think. In a wisdom situation. Yeah. What else do you see?
Contentment.
Yeah, contentment.
Paired with humility.
Humility. It's interesting that it talks about better the fear of the Lord than to have great treasure. And then just a few verses later, the reward is riches and honor and life, right? So you can be content in both situations. But I think the riches, yeah, Jason.
Well, I think two things can be true at the same time with that.
Mm-hmm.
Because it gives you the right perspective of what's important. Because you can have a little in a worldly sense, and that'd be better with the fear of the Lord, and then you can see all the ways that you've been blessed, you know, beyond just, oh, do I have a new car or a big house or all these, you know, toys that I can go play with. It's like, you know, I have, you know, children, I have a wife who loves me, I don't deserve any of these good things that have happened to me. You know, I think that's where my treasures are, is the blessings that God has given me. And I think that's what it's getting at, that mm-hmm. perspective. It's what God's done for you.
I think it also touches on the longevity of Christian reward. You know, our rewards are not all here mm-hmm. on earth. And so reward for humility and fear will not always be realized.
It's yeah. fine.
But hoping for heaven and that honor and riches will be rewarded there.
There's also just, if you fear the Lord, it affects your decision making, and like it's just true that if you make good decisions, you get good results. Mm-hmm. So I think that's partially what
yeah.
the riches and the honor and those things. You live life fearing the Lord, that leads to a good life that generally results in
yeah.
you reaping what you sow. And so
yeah, I think that's something to remember. That's a good point to remember, that the Proverbs, when it does speak in generalities. If somebody dies young, you can't say, well, that person didn't fear the Lord. He obviously died young, right? But in general, because of the choices you make, you should live a longer life. You're going to be safer. You're going to be obedient, right? So that's a good point. Just remember that this, speaking in generalities and the general principles that do apply. So wisdom, knowledge, insight of God. It brings praise to God when we are obedient and we fear Him. Generally, we'll live longer. We'll enjoy a more fulfilled life here on earth because we're serving the King. So, we're going to just wrap it up there. Getting into the beauty of fearing the Lord, all the benefits that it has. And we'll pick it up next week on the rest of these ideas. Thanks for coming.